2 weeks till Election Day, and I've got news for you folks. You are already registered to vote. That's right. Your preferences are already stored away since birth. In fact, there just might be a voting registry in your genes and your DNA functioning as some sort of a bio precinct captain. That's right. In an election, the outcome perhaps has already been decided. A simple blood test determines who wins. Ah, yes, the 21st century. What a great era we live in. Politics and genetics don't seem to have much in common outside of we know that Chris Matthews is like that because of his genes somehow. I mean, he's got political junkie in his blood, right? But what about voting patterns, actual voting preferences? Is there a genetic piece here? Kara Miller, our good friend up in Boston, has been investigating this for our partner WGBH. She's the host of Innovation Hub on Boston Public Radio. Kara, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So what have you been looking into, and what science is creeping closer to an actual genetic connection here on voting patterns?
You know, if you look at this issue 20, 30 years ago, political scientists really said voting behavior is purely determined by the environment. So you look at maybe the role of your parents and community leaders, your peers, what the religious leaders are saying. And of course, you also look at the quality and the message of the candidates. But what we've seen in the last couple of decades are more investigations of this idea that political leanings might be really influenced by genetics. And I actually think the degree to which genes seem to play a role in driving voting behavior has surprised even scholars here.
All right. And you've got the category, the old, genetics versus environment kind of thing. And what we've discovered in modern genetics is that they interact. There are environmental triggers for genetic, molecular configurations inside your genes. Here's Pete Hatemi from Penn State speaking to you about factors that go into shaping another characteristic, height. Height is correlated with genes. Is it possible we only think of actively choosing to be Democrats or Republicans? We don't have as much choice in the matter as, we have about as much choice in the matter as we do height. Listen to Peter.
You can see clearly it runs in families, right? I mean, it's pretty obvious that, you know, we tend to, if you look at your parents, you tend to be roughly, there's a high correlation between parents and children in height, and certainly in siblings. And there's belief that, oh, it's only a handful of genes, but it turns out thousands of genetic markers. And that only tells part of the story, because if you didn't have a proper diet, proper nourishment, proper development, then you actually wouldn't grow as tall as you could. So heavily regulated by the environment, but you have a genetic disposition.
All right, sketch out this environment versus genetics tension on something like politics, Kara.
So the question is, how do you test this kind of thing? So one of the answers is you look at identical twins, and they share about 100% essentially of their DNA. You compare them to fraternal twins, who are really like any other brother and sister, sister and sister. They share about 50% of their DNA. And what it turns out to be is that people who are identical twins vote a lot more like each other than people who are fraternal twins. Now, I have to say, what it looks like is that there's a whole bunch of genes, just in the way height is determined, on the way hair color is determined, skin color is determined, that affect political preferences. So we're not just talking about a Democratic gene or a Republican gene.
So let's talk about the twins just for a moment, and then I want to hear some more of your researchers here. Don't you have to separate the twins at birth to really get a sense of whether, you know, your separated twin is a Democrat over in California and lo and behold, the identical twin is, sure enough, a Democrat down in Mississippi?
You can do both of those things. You can look at twins, and SACE have done this. You can look at twins who have been separated at birth, and you can also look at twins who have grown up together. Because one thing that happens, of course, is after you leave your parents' house and you go to college and you're influenced by peers, people often become very different than what they were when they were growing up with their parents. But if you look at genetics, you find that about 50% of differences in broad ideology can actually be attributed to genetics. Now, I have to say that one thing is that it's complicated, right? Because there can't be a Democratic or Republican gene because your genes and your grandparents' genes and your great-grandparents' genes are very, very similar. And genes also have no way of knowing where they are. So You look at the political parties in China and Poland and America, genes have no way of knowing that. So the things that drive us have to be broader than issues that are from 2012 in the U.S.
Well, I should say that I vote nothing like my two grandparents. My four grandparents ever voted. But here's Rose McDermott, who's a professor of political science at Brown University, really laying out the case for how our genetics may give us an approach to political issues that are involved with our bodies. For instance, how much do we want the government to be involved in our sex lives? Listen.
How do you find a mate? How do you have children? How do you raise those children successfully? And people have different notions about what's appropriate to do in that regard. In 2012, in the United States, that may look like attitudes toward abortion, toward gay marriage, toward contraception, toward rape. But the underlying issues are really how we feel about regulating sex and reproduction.
And you can find markers for that in genetics?
Yes, so it turns out that there's really three issues that seem to really press people's genetic buttons. And like I said, these have to be issues that are important now, but they were important 500 years ago, and they were important 1,500 years ago. One is issues of sex and reproduction, because that's always been an issue. How involved do you get as a government in trying to make sure that civil society is perpetuated? A couple other broad areas. One is, how do you divide up resources? So from the beginning of time in various societies, there have always been people who contributed more and people who needed more. Well, do you help the people who need more? Or do you think, well, this is a drain on the society, forget those people? And the final area that seems to push people's buttons are, how do you deal with in-groups versus out-groups? So if you're the in-group and people are migrating in from some other area, do you think, well, these people are taking our resources, they're diluting us? Or do you say, well, they could make us stronger, let's start assimilating them? And that could have implications, obviously, on immigration, but it could also have implications for violence and war. So that's what you have to do. You have to think about, how do people deal with issues that have affected humans forever?
That is fascinating. Kara Miller, host of the Innovation Hub on WGBH, Boston Public Radio, on are there genetic predispositions in voting patterns that have to do with some pretty ancient issues for human beings? Kara, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.